Sermons at Westminster Presbyterian Church, an intentionally inclusive community of faith in Worcester, Ohio.
Our scripture reading this morning comes from the letter of James, chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us makes many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes is speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a word of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and it itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour out or pour fresh from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. Once again, James is very direct in his letter, not only to that first century Christians, but to us as a people as well. None of us, he says, never gets in trouble with the words we speak. So we all, this morning, stands guilty as he talks to each one of us. This to me, in a debate that played itself out here in Worcester, is so clear as we reflect back on what happened here in Worcester just after the Constitutional Court affirmed the power of love and marriage equality in the United States. Shortly after that decision of the Supreme Court, I was part of a group of six pastors who signed a letter to our local newspaper called the Daily Record. It was published on July 8th, entitled Clergy Support Ruling on Gay Marriage. It was a very short letter and didn't cast any blame, and I'm sharing that letter with you. We, the undersigned Worcester clergy, wish to express our joy and congratulations to all whose lives and families have been recognized and protected by the Supreme Court ruling allowing gay and lesbian couples the right to marry. We uphold marriage as being a covenant relationship that vows fidelity, mutual support, encouragement, and the care of one another in the best and worst of times. If you do not have a faith community and have been seeking one, know that you will be welcomed in any of our congregations, signed by six communities of faith here in Worcester. Following the publication of that letter, I was profoundly saddened by some of the responses in the letter to the editor. Many of these letters became deeply personal in their attack, especially against our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community, and the six communities of faith who was served by those pastors. Personally, I do think it's very, very important for us as a larger Worcester, Wayne County, and Holmes County community to reflect on this public debate as it asks the fundamental question, who do we want to be as a community? Not only we as a community of faith, but who do we as Worcester, Holmes and Wayne County want to be. This brings us to the letter of James. Two images are used in this morning's scripture reading to speak of a tongue that is under discipline, so that the tongue can be restrained in avoidance of destructiveness. Thus, a bit in the mouth of a horse. A bit is a small tool whereby a horse is controlled and reined in. A rudder is a small implement to steer a very, very large ship. The tongue, like bit and rudder, can serve well to be kept to keep the person under control so that it does not distort reality or hurt other people. A telling image in the scripture reading as well is the image of fire. It is used to dramatize the unwise destructive capacity of the tongue by way of misrepresentation, makes you think of our political debate in our country, slander or gossip. James would not have had the concept of going viral as we would think of today, but he knew that false speech can be inflammatory, causing, in his own words, a huge forest fire, so to speak, that disrupts social relationships, skew policy, and propel the economy in ways that make neighborly life impossible, especially for the least among us. The final pair of images suggests that the tongue reflects what is inside of a person. What is a person's true character? First, a spring can only sprout forth water that comes from a spring and a source itself. It cannot spout otherwise, it says. The good spring will yield good drinkable water. The bad spring will give only brackish water. Second, a plant can only grow its own kind of fruit from a fig tree, olives from an olive tree, from a grapevine. The tongue and its speech will disclose, he says, the character and the intent of us as speakers and who we are then as a community. James believes that no one of us, no one has the power to refrain thoroughly from misguided speech. No one, he says in verse 2. And actually, if you look at this letter or this verses, it's kind of a pessimistic outlook on our ability as human beings to be able to reach out through words to one another. He shines a light upon motives and our values. He says, from the center of our most important motives and values, we speak as a people. And we, he says, has a choice to consider whether we want to speak a blessing or whether we want to speak a curse. They proceed out of the same mouth, but, he says, they lead to different social worlds. And what kind of world do we want to live in? And remember, each one of us before these words. This question then, to me, becomes increasingly important as we realize the rapid pace in which our society is changing, not only in the United States, but here in Worcester as well. Just think, for many people, coming to the College of Worcester might be the first time in your life that you're surrounded by people from so many different countries. For others, they have the opposite experience. They might be a minority, or they might be a minority now here on the campus of the College of Worcester, but actually where they come from, they were the majority. How do we cope with changes like this? And this question is not only true for the College of Worcester, it's true for us as residents of Worcester. It is amazing to me how much our neighborhood has changed within the past 5 years that we've lived in on our street. Many, many more people from different countries are moving in, and the ethnic makeup of our town is changing. See, Worcester is not protected from this change. We are the seat of Wayne County. We have the College of Worcester. We have excellent businesses. We have a very good school. And such circumstances attract a diversity of people. And the question then before us is, how do we welcome such a diversity of people, especially when it comes to the words we use as we speak to one another. It is in this context to me that this debate this past summer was not only about our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and family and children. It's so much broader than just marriage equality, as it also relates to all those who are different. Who are those people who are different from the mainstream here in Worcester, Ohio? And to me, from my perspective, the mainstream voice is white, male, heterosexual, and evangelical. So the question before us is, how do we reach out and speak to women, people of color, people of different economic status, and people of different beliefs? I'm appalled sometimes to read the letter to the editor, especially when it comes to Islamophobia within our community of Worcester. Taking this threat then of change in consideration, I now realize that as a pastor and as representing you, this community of faith, I could have been more mindful of people who have a different belief than me when I co-signed that letter. Because just think, for a certain group of people, how upsetting the Supreme Court decision was to many in our community, as it represents such a huge cultural shift in our country that runs much deeper than just marriage equality. And if we really want to be the intentionally inclusive people we say we are, I could have been more sensitive to that cultural shift that that Supreme Court decision represented. So for this lack of sensitivity, I apologize. And on the blog, on our website, I apologize on behalf of you as a community of faith as well. And you should take me on more often when I speak on behalf of you, as I do represent you in the community. While I do apologize then for my lack of sensitivity, I do not apologize for signing the letter with my colleagues, as I think it was and still is important that people of the LGBTQ community, and for that matter, all people on the fringes of our society, know that there are welcoming communities of faith, affirming that we all are created in the image of God. Our scripture reading said this morning, all are created in the image of God. We all are people with infinite worth and infinite beauty. Isn't that what the gospel proclaims? Isn't that what we stand up for when we affirm that we are intentionally inclusive? The challenge is to extend that to those people who might disagree from us. In our effort to make Worcester, Ohio a more compassionate, welcoming, and inclusive community, I think it is important that we do not get distracted by some of the angry and dehumanizing responses that were written in response to the letter that we published. It appears that some of these responses represent a voice that is so used to being the mainstream opinion that in righteous self-indignant anger, they seem almost desperate to turn the attention back to a narrative that excludes and dehumanizes the other, especially when it comes to the LGBTQ community. And to me, this is something we see across our nation as the ethnicity changes. Just remember, in some years from now, we as the so-called white people will be the minority in this country. And as this debate changes, we're getting anxious and we're trying the best we can to change the narrative, to change the voices so the attention comes back to us, because we are so used to get the attention we feel we deserve. For LGBTQ people, their families and allies, this was a painful public debate, as some of these letters felt like bullying, something so many in the LGBTQ community are all too familiar with. Personally, I myself saw this debate as public bullying. Fortunately, there were also numerous voices who refused to be silenced. As you've studied maybe in your experience, if you've learned about bullying, sometimes it's not the bullies that hurts the most. It's the silence of the communities we find ourselves in that hurts the most. Fortunately for us, in our community, there were also numerous voices who refused to be silent in the midst of anger and violence, reminding us of the community we aspire to be as we grow in generosity of judgment and create a more welcoming community right here in Worcester, Ohio, for an increasingly diverse and pluralistic society. For those voices, we are forever thankful as they reminded us of what we are about as a people. And as you might remember if you follow these letters, there were people on both sides of marriage equality that reached out in care and concern, in affirming the humanity, the people of God. So when I'm saying that people spoke up, I'm not saying people spoke up because they support my view. There were people who disagreed from me, but still could uphold the humanity of each human being in this debate. Personally, I think we all will do well if we become more mindful of one another. And that is very difficult for us as a so-called intentionally inclusive community. Because how do we become more mindful of a person who disagrees totally from ourselves? Because who will come and worship here at Westminster? It's people already with a conceived idea of their faith and a belief and some desire to belong to an inclusive community. So somehow, as churches, we need to find a way to reach out behind the confines of Sunday morning worship. Maybe it's time we should stop worshiping on Sunday mornings and find a new idea how to build community. Because this debate, and I've said it earlier on 2 weeks ago, that this hour is the most segregated hour in America, is when we go to our respective places of worship. And as a young, we're very fortunate to have so many students here with us. I think we can count on your community or your generation. And this is a tremendous influence where you can take the lead among us and help us as older people to come to a better understanding, more mindfulness, to grow, to reach out in compassion so that we can build a better society. So in the end, I think we all do well by practicing the golden rule. And this is the words of Jesus saying, "In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this is the law and the prophets." Rephrasing that, we might say, in everything we say, talk to others as you would like them talk to you.
Thank you for sharing time with Westminster. You can learn more about our community of faith on our website at wpcworcester.org.